Blog Talk Radio.
It's Monday night, which means it's the latest episode of Graph Policy Radio, a show that mixes comics and politics. This is the show for folks who wonder how a judge would rule on Superman's super hearing when it comes to our right to privacy. Joining this me this week is my judge, Alana. How you doing?
Oh, thank you. I'm also your jury and your executioner. That's something that Judge Dredd and I share, although little else. He wears gold and silver at the same time. I mean, that's really questionable.
I mean, it was one where I kind of saw the court ruling about the NSA eavesdropping, and I'm like, oh, I've got to tie this
got
in.
Got to do something on that, yeah.
For the beginning of the show. Like, it's just too topical and too perfect to not have some fun with it.
Whereas I, even reflecting on this as a small child, I saw Judge Dredd, and I said to myself, those colors don't work together. I can't get into that character.
Something that was picking up speed and then just kind of went nowhere was there was a White House petition to actually have real Judge Dredd judges dispensing justice in here in the U.S. And this is back.
Wow, that's missing the point with a capital. definitely missing the point.
Yeah.
You probably also tell those people that. I'll be watching you. It's supposed to be stalkery. Like, it's the same people who don't understand that who seem to have that impression.
Well, partially, it was like when the site was clearly done, like, everyone was doing petitions as a joke. Like, there was the petition to do, to create our own Death Star and all that before they raised the cap to, like, 75,000 or whatever it is.
Yeah, to cut down on that exact thing.
Yeah, exactly. So we have a couple things to talk about this week. So first up, let's talk about the latest, I don't even call it a kerfuffle, it's just honesty from someone in the industry, which was kind of awesome. So I guess I'll give the summary. So, Paul Dini, who is a legend in the comic industry, the man created Harley Quinn. You've seen his work on numerous, like, Batman cartoon series and Batman comics. He was
Sergeant
one of the people...
Sergeant Renee Montoya.
Yeah, he was behind Long Halloween and... I'm totally blanking out on the other one. Just a legend. Like, the man is absolutely amazing. His career is awesome. So he was on Kevin Smith's, one of his numerous podcasts called Fat Man on Batman, where the two just really talk Batman. And it's really, really funny, and it's honest and goofy. And it might not be your sense of humor, but they were talking about TV series and cartoon series, and they were talking about Brave and the Bold. And at that point, the news had, like, just broken or hadn't really broken yet that the series is on hiatus or canceled. It's still kind of up in the air as to exactly what the hell's up with it.
Brave and the Bold has been off the air for a while, so this must have been an old news story.
Well, the thing is, it's supposed to come back in January.
Oh.
So it's still kind of up in the air as to exactly what the hell is going on. I mean, it broke a while ago that this was going on, so, you know, maybe there's just delays in when they post it. So the story came out was they were talking about, or Dini was talking about him creating cartoon series and the idiocy he was dealing with execs. And he said an exec told them about cartoon series and series like Young Justice and a couple others is they're all for the exact quote or paraphrase. I didn't really go over this quote to make sure that this is word for word, but Dini says they're all for boys. We don't want the girls. I mean, I've heard executives say this, you know, but at other places saying like, we do not want girls watching the show, to which Smith replied, why? That's 51% of the population. And Dini said, they do not buy toys. The girls buy different toys. The girls may watch the show. And Smith goes, so you can sell them T-shirts if they don't. I disagree. I think girls buy toys as well. I mean, not as many as boys do, but be, you know, you sell them something else, man. Don't be lazy and be like, well, I can't sell a girl a toy. Sell them a t-shirt, man. Sell them an umbrella with the character on it. Something like that. If it's not a toy, there's something else you can sell them. Like, just because you can't figure out your job, don't kill the chances of something that's going to reach an audience that's so self-defeating. When people go, like, they're the same people who go, oh, girls don't read comics. Girls aren't into comics. It's all self-fulfilling prophecies. They just make it that way by going, like, I can't sell them a toy. What's the point? To which Dini said, that's the thing, you know, I hate being Mr. Sour Grapes here, but I'll just lay it on the line. That's the thing that got us canceled on Tower Prep. Honest God was like, we need boys, but we need girls right there, right one step behind the boys. This is the networking talking. The network talking, one step behind the boys, not as smart as the boys, not as interested as the boys, but right there. And then we began writing stories that got into the two girls' backstories, and they were really interesting. And suddenly we had families and girls watching, and girls really becoming a part of the audience, and sort of like they picked up Harry Potter type of serialized way, which is what the Batman and it really going to kill. But a Cartoon Network was saying, F no. We want the boys' action. It's boys' action. This goofy boy humor. We got to get in there, and we can't. And I'd say that look at the numbers. We've got parents watching with the families, and when you break down, yeah, we got the girls too. And they said we need more boys. Smith's response: it's heart wrenching. And DNC, and then that's why they canceled us. They put a show called Level Up, which is, you know, goofy nerds fighting CG monsters. It's like, we don't want the girls because the girls won't buy toys. We had a whole merchandise line for Tower Prep that they shit canned before it ever got off the launching pad, because it's like boys buy the little spinny tops. They buy the action figures. Girls buy princesses. We're not selling princesses. The actual discussion, I highly recommend people go and listen to it. It comes about like halfway point, and they really get into it. It's kind of a fascinating conversation, and like one of the first, I would say, honest reactions of what is going on in the minds of the executives. And Dini has way worse stuff to say later on in the podcast that I'm shocked no one picked up on, of why Dini isn't involved in comic book movies anymore. But yeah, it's really, really worthwhile. You can find articles on it in a bunch of sites. The IO9 is the one I'm referencing. But yeah, so we get some truth about, what the higher ups are thinking.
Yeah, finally. Now I know why they took Young Justice away from me. It's because I'm stinky. I hadn't realized all these years. I had thought that I had lost my cooties, but I see now that I still had them all this time, and it was only the studio executives who were able to tell that. Well, I think that Dini did a great service to fandom and to the entertainment industry at large by speaking up and saying this. You know, it's stuff that we'd always suspected, I guess, and it's really good to have, you know, a leader in the industry saying, like, this is the shit we were told. I cannot wait to hear what the studios are going to say now.
Oh, I don't think the studios are going to say jack. They're going to completely ignore it.
Reporters are going to ask them. Reporters are going to ask them questions.
I would hope so. Well, let me rephrase that.
And I
real
think it's
going
to put pressure on
questions.
Them maybe to change. Yes, yes. And I think it's going to put pressure on you know, the shows to, like, get with the program. That you're right. You do sound stupid when you say girls don't buy toys. It just sounds stupid. You know, especially when these guys claim that what they're doing isn't just like the 80s merchandise everything. You know, everything's just an ad for the toy period that you and I grew up in. They're all trying to be like, oh, this is a great new age of animation and artistry and blah, blah. It's like, oh, you just said that you only care about selling toys. Oh, and you're too stupid to know how to sell toys to a diverse audience, you know. And looking at the numbers of you could be making dolls, like, rather than just action figures, you could be making dolls for tons of stuff too, right? So
that's what I don't
close-minded,
understand.
Stupid, backwards. I honestly think this stems back to childhood, you know. My God, I wish I could recall who wrote this amazing piece. African-American cultural critic recently was saying, like, if a boy is told that he's a girl and he acts like it's the worst thing ever, And what is the, what are we teaching boys about girls? So, you know, if being called a girl is the worst insult a boy could ever hear. And I think this is just part of that, right? They think that I have cooties. They think that I have cooties and that those cooties are going to get on them and make them weak in some way. And they're stuck at that level of maturity.
Yeah.
I guess they don't want my money.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right now trying to crunch numbers while you're talking to show how stupid this is.
You crunching numbers to prove date ideas? Never.
Here we go.
You know what?
So well, okay, so I'm going to break it down each. So we got toys. Toys is 19.8 million people. So this is so what I'm talking about when crunching numbers. So I go and manipulate Facebook and get all these numbers and actually look at things like their gender. So toys, just a very general term, 19.8 million people in the United States. How many would you guess is women out of that 19.8?
50%.
So out of 19.8, it's 14.8 is women.
The majority.
Wow. Yeah, that's a huge majority. That would be close to 75%. Let's look at action figures.
And what's funny to me, too, is, like, anecdotally, it's true that girls tend to mature a little earlier than boys do and therefore stop playing with children's toys a little bit earlier than boys do, but they still buy tons of stuff, and you can charge more for it.
Well, that's what I don't understand. So the guy's talking about toys. So action figures is the exact opposite. Men are 75% of action figures, and I'd imagine women dominate dolls, the term doll. I'm just surprised toys isn't more 50-50 split. So this is my question about the thing, and I wish – and Deanie and Smith correctly pointed this out – is so girls might not buy the 3 3/4-inch – G.I. Joe-like figures, action figures, or Star Wars figures, or whatever. That might, it very well could be a myth. They do. Maybe they don't do it in the volume boys do, whatever. That's not the point of this. The point is, girls buy other things. I mean, Barbie has been around for how long? You know, you're telling me a line of Young Justice Barbie dolls, of Artemis and Martian Man, what's the Martian girl?
Yeah, Ms. Martian, exactly.
Ms. Martian,
yeah. Stylable hair as well as weapons.
You're telling me that...
And stealth outfits versus party outfits. Like, I see it all right now.
Like, you're telling me that wouldn't fly off the shelves to both boys and girls, be huge on the second market. That it just blows my mind. Like, even having a Robin or... I don't even know who else. Aqualad and Kid Flash, I think, is on the team.
Yeah,
having,
that's right.
Having them,
I'm glad you're learning the
them,
show.
I somewhat know Young Justice. I just haven't watched a ton. Having them is like Barbie-esque dolls. Like, girls wouldn't dig that. I would think they totally will. I would. It would be fascinating to know how many Ken dolls are sold versus Barbie dolls, but I'd imagine it's still a large population.
Well, they... don't sell as, and I'm sorry, I'm just pulling this, I know I've read that they don't sell as many because he's essentially posed as an accessory to Barbie rather than a protagonist, really. But in a show where the characters are equal, I'm sure they would sell plenty of them, too.
I would think so.
And it just, I just swear, I'm telling you, their insistence of these things comes from an emotional, childlike state.
Yeah, I mean, they're just going back to what they did when they were kids, and... you know, all these guys are, well, at least some of them are probably in their 40s or 50s and are having really odd, repressed memories of not allowing to play with dolls, I guess. I don't know. It's just confusing.
Yeah, and they're just, like, not letting me in the clubhouse.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm small out. I don't know why. I never understood that. Oh, God. Not to bring up childhood issues, but I never understood the phase that kids go through where, like, girls and boys aren't supposed to hang out together. That, like, wrecked me. That was the worst thing. And then, thank God, when we hit puberty, we were able to hang out again, because that was just terrible. But, like, they have these notions that, like, if a woman wants something, it's less valuable to them. There's something tainted about it. And it's because they're taught that we're bad. we're dirty, we're stupid, whatever, or that liking things that we like makes them weak. And this is carrying into their business practices in ways that are clearly irresponsible. And I'm sorry, I don't think Level Up sold any merchandise.
I don't even know what the hell Level Up is. So
I watched it because it would come on after my cartoons. It's like, I mean, it's just, stupid, stupid show. Not awesome Young Justice, which is a fantastic cartoon.
I don't know anything about it. So I'm so Level Up has got a whopping 71,000 fans compared to Adventure Time's 15 million.
Jeez.
And
guess what Adventure Time appeals to? Oh, right, people of all genders and ages. Who would have thought that that would be a good business idea? Oh.
Well, they do bring that up. They said they say things like Adventure Time, while it's fantastic, it's a difficult thing to do, and I totally get where they're going. And, you know, it sometimes is lightning in the bottle, and it's hard to repeat that, but it's doable. Like, clearly it's doable.
Mm-hmm.
Steven Universe seems to be building up a nice following, and Bravest Warriors
is
picking up a nice following, and they all seem to have a very similar vibe and audience. And yeah, I mean, it. How about this one? Adventure Time, 4 million fans.
Mm.
Female fans, 2 million. Split almost perfectly, 50-50.
Yeah, exactly. And none of those boys feel like they're less, like they're invalidated by the fact that girls like it too. You know, I just think that there's these like backward notions that these executives have that stem from sexism that poison their ability to appraise art, like, or I guess I should say cultural products rather than art per se, but you get the idea. So, yeah, it's good that we're talking about this, and we definitely should be talking about it and laughing at those jerks. And, you know, they need to get with the program. They're not doing well right for their shows or for the industry. I guess they don't want my money. Again, I get told that a lot. A lot of people apparently don't want my money.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Smith actually said it best in all of it, and it's the one I latched onto is he said, you know, just because you can't figure out your job, don't kill the chances of something that's going to reach an audience. So
that
in other words, like,
great line.
Wouldn't it be a good thing to have a massive female audience? Like, you know, great. We'll go one or two things. So I've got a show that appeals to boys. Level Up, it's got 70,000 fans total. Total whopping 70,000 fans. It's nothing. Young Justice, the TV series, has almost 258,000. So 250,000 more, or 200,000 more than Level Up. Isn't it good?
And I haven't even
gone up
to like the show yet.
So
I
got to
go through my profile now.
A 50-50 split, and you've got a show of, let's say, 125,000 boys that you can market to the action figures to. And then actually having a problem of saying, we've got these 125,000 women and little girls that we need to market to. Let's put our heads together as to how to do that.
That's a great point.
Isn't that the better thing to have? Like, which would you rather have, the 70,000 of boys or the 250,000 that split somehow?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's a great way to put it. That is a great way to put it. My God. You know, I don't know. I just hope that we are moving towards a time where we won't have to hit our heads against walls quite so often. But the problem with people of that generation, you know, is they're not letting hold of their death grip over culture quite so,
well,
quite so freely. So it takes a while yet.
I don't even know if this guy is of this generation. On top of our site, Heidi at The Beat, like, loves the data that I put together, and she has me do a weekly post over there. There's a guy there that's like every freaking week says, I don't get the point of this. So I finally just kind of snapped and was like, the point is, let me find my points because they're actually fairly good. let's Let's find it. So, like, every week the guy kind of just goes in the comments and is really negative about the posts, which at this point I'm wondering why he reads the posts other than to troll and make these stupid, irritating comments. So I had to think about demographics in Wonder Woman this past week about around the world, just because I'd be fascinated to know where she's popular. And we posted that at our site today. So my point was, the point of like all these Facebook demographic things is a bunch of things. One, it shows comic fans or geeks or whatever, just fans in general, aren't 20 to 30 something white guys. It's a diverse crowd in taste, gender, age, etc. I said two, because it's diverse, the industry needs to look at how they're marketing instead of the one size fits all that's been the standard, and move on to modern marketing that involves segmenting and targeted messaging. So three, there was a massive amount of self-identified fans out there, and we should engage them. And fourth, it's fun.
Nice. That's a great answer. Did he respond to that?
He asked for white papers, basically. He wants me to go into the heavy detail and case studies.
Did you ask him what his problem was?
The answer is probably
your problem? Do you just hate geekdom? Is that is that what this is about, that you just aren't happy with fandom? And
yeah,
gosh.
It's irritating.
Well, I think you did a really great job of explaining it there, so... Yeah, I think that the series that Brett's been doing, where he analyzes Facebook stats, basically, you know, for those who don't know, political world, there's a ton of information that you gather about different audiences, and you use that to determine how you're going to communicate with them. For example, you know, I'm a member of, let's say I'm a member of, email list for Credo Action. They are a really awesome organization that does a lot of multi-issue campaigns and stuff. They know which kinds of issues I open emails from, and they send me emails about those issues, and I open those issues and I participate in those things. And they'll send, and if somebody has different interests than me in terms of their activism, they'll send them different emails. And that's just like basic segmentation that people do in like online activism and stuff like that. You know, any large nonprofit is doing that kind of segmentation when they're messaging their fans or their members or anything like that. This is just basic stuff that everyone does now. Nonprofits do this. Nonprofits that have no freaking money do this. But the industry, the comics industry, the geek industry, can't be bothered to do the basic kind of marketing segmentation to broaden their fan base that nonprofits with no money do. And that's just what floors me. And then they have the nerve to complain, you know?
Yeah, you nailed it.
They're just not doing their job.
Yes.
Yeah.
Grr. Let's talk about comics.
Alrighty, we had a bunch that we wanted to discuss. So, what you want to start with?
Let's discuss Battle of the Atom.
Okay.
Is that done yet?
Yes, it's been
done.
Yet? Yeah. Yes.
Okay. It's done
we're
now.
In,
thank you.
We're into the post follow-up segment of it all.
Because I think that nothing happened, I guess. Seems like, I mean, the X-Men from the first class are still here. But did anybody learn, grow, or change in any way?
A little. So people switched sides. Some went to Cyclops' school.
Yeah.
So that happened.
I mean, yeah, Kitty's over there now instead, which still doesn't make any sense to me.
And so are the new or the original X-Men.
But it just seems like the whole thing was just nothing. It was all over nothing.
Yes. Yeah, I generally agree. The the big, I mean, the big thing that fell after it, and if you're reading Wolverine and the X-Men,
yeah,
is all the stuff with S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Sentinels.
Well, that's the Battle of the Atom, according to the covers of things that I'm getting. But, like, they're still considered, like, part of that series. But, you know, I'm starting to read on Inhumanity stuff now. I'm so freaking tired of events. I know it's a cliche to complain about it, but that's only because it's true. I bought the first issue of just, like, Inhumanity, the self-titled piece, and I'm probably the only person who's ever said this. Please tell me if you think I'm wrong, but I bought it because Karnak the Shatterer was on the cover, and I happen to be a fan. I'm not really sure if there are other people who buy comics because Karnak the Shatterer is on the cover, but nevertheless, interesting choice. And I think that they did a good job with that. I don't know. Have you been reading Inhumanity?
I did. What did you think of the end?
Well, can we spoiler this or can we spoiler what happens?
Yeah, just tell people spoiler.
Spoiler, like cover your ears for the next couple seconds or whatever. I think that they treated the death really well and sensitively, and it was in character. You know, I'm sad to lose this character who's really such a Kirby, Jack Kirby creation, you know. But I'm okay with it. And I'm scared to hear, you know, to see what's next and what it all means. But I'm just so freaking burned on these events, these, like, multi-crossover whatevers, and they keep putting writers whose work I like on them, like, to trick me, you know, into getting into another event. But I think I'm going to have to just say no. Like, I love the Inhumans. Something about their powers and the way they speak and the Kirbiness of it all, I've always just really gotten a big kick out of the Inhumans. But I can't – the disappointment you just keep getting from these big crossover mega things, you know, if I had all the money in the world, sure, I would still pick them all up. I would, but I don't. And there's so many cool – more self-contained titles coming out. You know, She-Hulk is going to be coming out, Elektra is coming out, Loki, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. There's so many Marvel books coming out that I'm going to want to read. I can't get sucked into another massive crossover of craziness. It's just, I have to put my foot down. But I thought Inhumanity was, I had very low expectations, actually. And I guess I was pleasantly surprised. What did you think?
It was good. Like it was a good setup. It hopefully caught folks up.
Yeah, it definitely was like it had these huge info dumps that didn't feel like huge, terrible info dumps. And that's,
yeah, which was the good thing.
That's a skill. That's a skill. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's good. It'll be interesting how... I think the bigger thing, the question for you is, have you been noticing the INH? And I forgot what the other one is. Of the various storylines that are going on after the numbers?
INH?
Yeah, you'll see in the numbers ever softer. It'll say like number 22.ina. It started.
Hello.
Hey, I'm.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can. You were breaking up for a bit.
Oh, okay. Let me dial right back in.
Okay. In the meantime, I'll regale everybody with tales of how awesome the Steven Universe cartoon has been. I really recommend it. I think it's great for kids, for adults. The animation quality is remarkably high. They have beautiful painted backgrounds, and the writing is charming and funny, and I really think it's going to be a huge hit. And it's, you know, they're replaying various episodes all the time, so you can just put on anytime you see it on TV, give it a watch. You don't really need to watch it in order or anything like that. It benefits from it, but it's by no means required. And, yeah, I just can't say enough good things about Steven Universe cartoon on Cartoon Network.
If you like Adventure Time, you'll love it. But I also feel like it has a more quiet tone to it in some ways. It's a little bit more reflective. So if you feel like Adventure Time is too like hyper-energetic for you, then Steven Universe might actually be just what the doctor ordered for a cartoon. I definitely think it's the biggest new hit that you're going to see in an animated series that's coming out. I don't think there's anything else that's as widely anticipated as this has been. So that is my endorsement, Steven Universe on Cartoon Network. Now, I hope Brett will be joining us again soon. technical difficulties. Brett, are you there? No? Still me? Okay. Another book, comic book that I can... Brett? Another comic book.
Yeah, hopefully this works.
Ah, there you go. I decided to do a brief digression talking about Steven Universe while you were off the phone, but now I'm done and we can talk about INH again. What were you saying?
I haven't watched Steven Universe yet.
Oh, I was just telling you. Well, you just have to listen to the podcast. I already told everybody. I don't want to bore them by repeating myself.
Okay, fair enough.
So INH, you're saying, are they having special numbering for the Inhumanity stuff?
Yeah, so they're doing numbering to tell you kind of like what storyline's going on. .INH is Inhumanity, for instance. Whereas .NW is Marvel Now.
And where do you see it?
You'll see it after the number for the issue. Clearly, it's working very well. If you haven't noticed it.
Yeah, I mean, so basically, like, well, I'm only reading, like, one title that has NIH to it, so that's the thing. But, so is it to help you figure out the order in which to read your comics?
No, so they've got the various plot lines going on right now. It's a way to distinguish what overall plot line the series is dealing with.
Now, what has Marvel said were the reasons for choosing to do that?
Supposedly making it easier for people to understand.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good idea. I just definitely did not notice it, though, but I do think it's a good idea.
It's interesting. So it's interesting. The fact that you haven't noticed it is kind of fascinating.
Well, I read all my comics on a bus this time, so there you go. I still continue to be perplexed by what they label as being Marvel Now versus what isn't. I think that they don't really know. I think they just call lots of things that are cool Marvel Now, whether or not it's a title which is actually something which should be accessible to new people or not. And I would really hope that Marvel would, like, remember what the point of Marvel Now is supposed to be and just use that only for comics that are new reader friendly. But it's nice to see that they're actually acknowledging, like, yes, we're going to try to help you figure out which books are related to which books, so.
I'm kind of fascinated by the whole Marvel Now promotion as a whole. I mean, it helped. Sales got boosted, so something worked.
Well, I think it's because the books were good. But I think that if the point of Marvel Now is what they said it was supposed to be, which is, you know, giving a place for new fans, new readers to check things out, you know, without dumping all of their continuity the way DC did, they're not doing that right. There definitely are some titles that are Marvel Now that are comics where I look at them and say, yeah, you can give this to a new reader and they'll totally get it. And lots of them, it's just like they're just using it to talk about comics that are cool. And I'm glad that they think a lot of these comics that I love are cool. They are cool. But they're not comics I would give to a new reader. They definitely assume too much knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. I mean, that's going to be, I think, a big test with all new Marvel Now to see how many are very reader-friendly.
Yeah. I have a feeling that the new X Factor book might actually be able to be reader-friendly.
But overall, I haven't really seen much logic in what they're doing. It just seems like if you could tell your friend, okay, so the concept of this comic book is there's a superhero team that's sponsored by a corporation. Go.
That's not what I got of it.
And I think that that's something you could, you know, maybe say is Marvel Now. But there's just so many things that they've put in there that don't make any sense to Marvel Now. But sorry, I've complained about that before, so I want to get back to Inhumanity. Do you think you're going to keep reading stuff from the Inhumanity series?
It depends. Like the main series, I will. They've got a series called Inhuman coming out, which will actually deal with people who have gained new powers that I want to check out. But other than that, I'm kind of, I think I'm just going to pretty much read what I, you know, check out the new series and that's about it.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad I read the issue I read. I love Karnak. I miss Karnak already. But I don't know if I really have room in my mental space for, like, another big meta event about, even if it is about Inhumans. If somebody tells me, it looks like they're going to have the next issue is going to be, like, specifically about Medusa. I will have to pick that up as a huge Medusa fan. But after that, I'll give it a break, mayhap. But there's a lot of Marvel books coming out that I'm really excited by. Silver Surfer, and we've already talked about some of those. But one book that I had been meaning to read for a long time and hadn't picked up till just now, though, was Avengers Assemble. Why wasn't I reading that before? I mean, I know why I wasn't. Like, I was trying to not read every freaking comic on the market. It's literally the only reason I didn't pick up Avengers Assemble earlier because, you know, the characters are some of my favorites. I love Spider-Woman. I think she's a very interesting character. And I love Kelly Sue DeConnick's writing a great deal, and I want to support, you know, female writers on top of it all. But I hadn't picked up the book yet, and I just picked up the issue that has Black Widow, Spider-Woman, and Spider-Girl on it, and was just thoroughly charmed by it.
That really was funny. Really, really good. The previous issues are not as solid, I don't think.
Oh,
that was
maybe
a great issue.
A good jumping off point. Cool.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised at how good that one was.
Oh, okay. Well, I definitely am interested in getting into that series now. I really like had it was funny and exciting and self-aware, but not like too much patting itself on the back, self-aware, you know. And I love the female characters that they highlighted particularly. Like, they're just really enjoyable and interesting characters. It was fun to see them mess with each other, and I also really like the dynamic of having Spider-Girl, who's a teenager, just trying to get the adults to listen to her because she knows something that they don't know and they need to know, and they won't take her seriously for a while. And Lord knows we've been there as people, so that was fun to see the comic taking that on. And also with a similar issue in the most recent issues of Young Avengers. Are you still reading Young Avengers?
I am. I mean, there's only two issues
left,
I think.
Yeah, only two issues left. Oh, my God, Young Avengers. I'm so full of feelings, which is exactly what he, you know, the writer intends. But just connecting it to that, they both have a story that's really focused on young people trying to tell adults something important and adults not listening and just assuming that the kids don't know what they're talking about. I felt these most recent issues of Young Avengers to be really emotionally resonant. You know, I know a lot of times when characters that we care about have hard things happen to them, fans have a tendency to reject that and not want it because it's like watching your friends have pain or anger or negative things happen to them. But I think it's just perfect. You know, maybe I'm a sadist, but like when interesting and character worry things that are negative beset characters who are like, I don't say, you know, oh, stop being so mean to X, Y, and Z. I appreciate it as a character building thing because they're not real, okay? So it's okay. And I'm really like what they're doing with Loki now in the book. And I know it's all there to set up his new solo action series, but I have very, very rarely seen a comic handle a change like that as well.
And I really feel like his character was really hit emotionally in the heart by what just happened in the books. Are you enjoying?
It's something I'll give the series a lot of props for. It hits all the emotional notes really, really well. And the fans are clearly drawn over a lot of the stuff that's happened in the series.
Yeah. But I'm distraught, but I'm distraught in like a, oh, that's really good drama, you know? I'm not, you know, I'm not going to be like, Kieran, why did you do blur? It's like, guess what? It's fiction. This is good drama. And the bad things that are happening to people are very, very realistic and human and well-depicted, and it's a good thing for us to be seeing them, you know?
Yeah, that's I think it'll be fascinating to see what they do next. I mean, the series has a hell of a following. I gotta imagine we'll be seeing more of Young Avengers, all-new Marvel now.
Gosh, I hope so. I don't know what Kieran is going to be writing after this for Marvel, because he's still doing Iron Man, which I guess I should try because I adore his writing, but it's just really hard for me. I've never gotten into an Iron Man book. It's just never been something I've gotten into. But they better have him writing something else. I don't think he's assigned to anything else right now but on Marvel.
Well, they seem to be changing around creative teams pretty regularly now with the all-new Marvel Now. They just announced their second switch, so
A second switch of what?
So they originally, I think it was Zeb Wells was supposed to write Elektra, and now they announced Howard Blackman, who was writing Batwoman, is now writing it. And today they announced that Jonathan Hickman is off of Inhuman, and Charles Soule is going to be taking over.
Wow, they really are moving things around.
Yeah, and what's funny is when this stuff happens with DC, everyone gives them shit. But there's now two creative teams in a matter of days, and no one has said anything.
Marvel has built up a lot of goodwill with the fans by not treating us like shit. And they're certainly enjoying the fruits of that right now, because you're right, that is really hypocritical that we're not complaining about it.
Yep.
Speaking of the guy who's writing Batman, though, I read the first issue that was written by the new writer, which is like essentially a Year Zero story. I am not impressed. Not impressed. Boring. Blah. I might finally have to give Kate up, at least for a while. But it scares me, of course, because I'm sure that when I stop reading it, the conclusion that DC will have is that female characters don't sell. DC is only capable of taking information and interpreting it badly. That's like, they're having some weird game of telephone in hell over there, where anything you say will be that could possibly be interpreted incorrectly will be. But I'm ready to give up Batwoman. I know you've given it up yourself already.
Yeah, I dropped it a while ago. Only thing I'll say about the new writer is he's kind of in a crappy spot because he didn't have a long time with the issue. And I wouldn't judge him by the first issue. That's my only thought. Is like the first issue is gonna suck. And hopefully further ones will be better.
I really do feel like it was a ripoff. Like it was really just felt very amateurish. Yeah, so maybe it was just the time, not having enough time. But Young Avengers, when it goes away, will leave a very big hole in my heart, and I just don't know what could possibly fill it. I'm open.
I imagine that they'll be announcing another Young Avengers series.
Well, he's not going to be doing it, though.
No, but, I mean, there's tons of people who've done great Young Avengers runs, so I'll cross my fingers that it'll be somewhere near
Brian,
as good.
Brian Caban is busy right now, I think. I want to have Kieran writing something else for Marvel, basically, is all I'm saying. Because I really think he does a great work with their characters. And I just can't get into Iron Man. Have you been reading Iron Man?
Not regularly. I've been kind of walking off on it and need to catch up.
Mm. I finally stopped buying Fearless Defenders, which, as you know, we've both been joking that we buy Fearless Defenders for the covers. And then that book is going to be wrapping up pretty soon.
Yeah, there's only a couple more issues of that as well.
Did you actually stop buying it?
I'm still buying it just because I know there's only a couple more issues left, and I'm like, I might as well finish this off.
Am I missing anything?
No, not at all.
What a shame, right? Great cast, cool idea. Obviously the covers are amazing. But I felt like the writing was just sort of not particularly creative, and the art wasn't good enough to justify just buying it for the art. The story was just sort of clunky, like it felt like it's getting put through the pages. You know?
Yeah, in the end, it had a concept that just wasn't followed through.
Yeah, that's really what it is. You know what else is a concept that I'm not feeling getting followed through really well right now? Much as it breaks my heart, is the movement.
Yeah, that I dropped. I've given up on it.
It's really hard for me because it's like the only book by... Actually, no, that's not true. I'm reading Red Sonja, so never mind. I'm still reading Sidney Magill. But yeah, like I'm such a huge fan of hers, you know, that it's really frustrating for me to not be more entranced with what she's writing on that, but I don't know. Go ahead.
Let's move on to Imagine Agents, which is a series that I love, but you had other opinions.
Tell everybody the concept of Imagine Agents.
All right, so Imagine Agents is Men in Black meets Ghostbusters, and the idea that there is this government agency whose entire job is to round up imaginary friends once the kid reaches a certain age and you no longer see them.
Sort of reminds me of the concept of Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, that cartoon. Did you ever watch that cartoon?
No.
Oh, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends is a fantastic Cartoon Network show with beautiful character design, really great art that came out. Must have been 2005, I'm guessing. Long time ago now. But it was essentially a foster house for imaginary friends after their owners outgrow them and then other kids who I guess have less imagination go and adopt from them. But regardless, I began reading issue one at Brett's strong recommendation, and I found it boring.
Kills me. If I had to guess on a series that you would like, I would have guessed you would have liked it.
Well, the concept is really funny and charming, and it's obviously, you know, an all-ages book. I felt like the writing and how the parents talk about the kids is condescending in a way that kind of alienated me.
I can see that. I can support that and see how you take it that way.
And then I felt like there was I'm not someone who shies away from long text. Like, I'm someone who gets frustrated with decompression when there is not enough dialogue. But I felt like this had so much text on issue one, I actually was, like, skimming things. And I don't skim comics. That's just not something I do. It's pretty out of the norm for me. So that I felt like that was not a good sign about writing.
I'm going to have to go back. Having a lot of text isn't something I remember.
Maybe you just felt that way because I wasn't that into it. So tell me what you like about it.
I really like the interplay between the two agents. They've got a cool banter, and there's some back and forth that I really like. But to me, it was like just these concepts of these imaginary friends that I just thought it was really cute, and there was something fun about it. And it was just, to me, like a really good all-ages book.
Yeah. I appreciate that somebody is out there making, you know, and, like, working on making all-ages books. And I also appreciate...
And I love the art.
The art's cute. I also appreciated that the little boy, like, who's sort of the main little boy in issue one, this says something sad about other comics, but, like, the point of him isn't for him to just be, like, either masculine or feminine or nerdy or cool, or like he's just himself, you know? And I appreciated that. They weren't trying to make him like a stereotype in any one particular direction or another. And it feels a lot of times that a lot of male characters that are kids are almost written like to refute female characters. And I didn't feel that about him at all. So I think that the little boy is good. But the comic just didn't interest me. I don't know. I give it to a kid, though. Like, somebody said, like, what's a good comic for kids to check out? I would certainly put that on the list. Who's the writer and artist for this?
Oh, that's a good question.
I'm sorry, who's the publisher?
Boom Studios does it.
Ah, Boom. They are certainly specialists in kids stuff these days.
Yeah, they're rocking the kids, the kids line. So it's kind of impressive that what they put out this year and how much they've diversified and grown.
And you've been writing that series of interviews with women who work for Boom Studios.
Yes, we're number 7 with last week, and I think we've got an 8 this week. I've been told there's many, many interviews to go, so they've been awesome about that. So every Thursday on our site, we publish a new interview with a female staffer of Boom, Arkea, The Boom, and it's anything. So it's anyone who has stuff that's ordered, to a receptionist, to editors, to writers, artists. It really runs all over the place.
And that's really important to
awesome.
Me that it's not just editors, it's also writers, right? It's also female writers.
Yeah, so I mean, it's anyone that's part of the company in any way whatsoever, as long as they're female. I want to master these, you know, checking this out and answering questions and participating to get their answers. So we do every single one the same type of questions, and it's just been seeing how they vary. And so far, it's been interesting.
I'm sure it's a lot of fun, you know, for a lot of these behind-the-scenes folks to be interviewed in that way. But I also just think it's, like, really important to show, and again, like, it's great that they have women in all of these different roles over there, of course. And that's not to say that, you know, the woman who runs shipping isn't, like, important and her labor is not remarkably valuable. It is. We need that, obviously. But that it also is women who are in positions of creative control, and that makes a big difference. And this can't be like when the Daily Show trotted out its female employees, and they were all folks in, like, the wardrobe department and HR and stuff. Like, those are important jobs, but those aren't creative jobs where you're controlling the content of what comes out in the media. And Boom has been doing a much better job of having, you know, female writing and art staff. That's just something which they've been doing. And they've also been exploding all over the map, and I don't think those two things are unrelated.
Yeah, I mean, it's been cool checking out the responses, because every single person has really said the same thing, is it's an experience where they don't see gender. You either can do the job, you can't do the job. You know, they'll talk video games and baseball and whatever, whether or not you're a guy, girl, they don't care. As long as you're confident to do your job, that's what they care about.
But they must have had some amount of, like, active recruiting towards identifying women for some of these creative roles, because it's not like the other publishers have been doing that.
Well, that's what I would think, and I've been trying to figure that out.
The women aren't there. They say that, you know, the other publishers insist that there aren't women who can do those things.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I wonder. And one of the questions is, what is this company doing different than all the other ones? The answer that seems pretty consistent is they don't see gender. They don't care about this sort of stuff. If you're talented, you're talented.
But that's the thing, right? So the companies that are completely, like, backwards and don't have women in positions of power would say the same thing. They would say, we don't see gender. We're just hiring based on talent.
Yep.
So that's why the answer doesn't really the answer. You know what I'm
right.
saying?
Right.
I agree, but I'm just saying what they've been repeating.
Right.
So when it all wraps up, there's some time point down the road, I'm hoping to get higher up and ask them about this sort of stuff. How does this actually come about? Like, you have to put some effort into this to make it happen.
Or have them say, no, you know what, all the publishers are getting just as many manuscripts from women. They're just throwing them in the trash. Like, that's the other thing they could say to me. You know, they could say, you know, we're just doing normal stuff and everyone else you know. It's not like, oh, Boom does manga or, like, some other genre which is particularly female-gendered or anything. It's strictly, you know, a publisher that publishes a diverse kind of titles, but they're doing something different. And I know that they're saying they don't see gender, and maybe they feel like they don't, actually, but this is exactly the same thing to the publishers who are completely backwards in their hiring practices would say. So something's going on.
I have a little bit of a theory in that Marvel will only hire you, supposedly according to their practices and their submissions and stuff, is unless you've worked for one of the other publishers, or you are a published for no quantity, Marvel's not going to hire you. So you then have to look at what they're hiring, you know, what the pool is at Dark Horse, Boom, IDW, Image. It's not many women. So if Marvel really has that attitude, of course women are going to work there. I don't think that's the case, and I think it's so strange, but...
No, that could be the case. And maybe they need to say, like, you know what, we're going to just look at these manuscripts more and determine, like, who's talented enough, even if they haven't had, you know, even if they haven't really been discovered yet, like, maybe it's good for us to be known as somebody who discovers talent, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you just go to a small press area at a convention, you find tons of women who are doing amazing stuff. So with Boom, and we brought it up a couple times, is in like the back of Adventure Time and Brave Warriors, they seem to give a shot to a lot of people. So maybe there's something towards that, in that they are just willing to give more people a shot and who works and who doesn't.
That is
because
true.
They're a small publisher,
you know,
and they can't.
They're a smaller publisher, yeah. It's sort of a stepping stone. I guess the real test for Marvel is, and DC, is now that, you know, you have Boom out there actually, like, hiring these women through these creative roles and proving themselves, is Marvel going to take them seriously? Is Marvel going to hire them?
Is Marvel going to start coaching those creators? When Marvel starts coaching creators from Boom that are amazing women who have proven themselves as awesome talents, then I'll believe their practices and that there's not more to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, we're going to see if Marvel hires these people. But the thing is, though, let's say that was the rule. It's still wrong. They just need to, for the sake of having a more diverse readership, which the comic book industry needs to survive, Marvel and DC need to take a proactive stance of identifying talent that is diverse. It is in their business interests to do so. And I understand why they want to only hire people who've worked for other big publishers before, but that's why they all have the same writers, and that's why it's also freaking boring. So take a chance at reviewing the work. You're not taking a chance on the talent. This is proven talent. These women have written independent comics successfully, or they've written web series of comics successfully. But take a chance on, you know, putting them into your series. You know, it's not like you're hiring them for a contract. It's not like you have to keep someone who isn't working out, you know. But they're just,
you give them a backup in a comic and see how they do. You put them in the back of a Hawkeye or Avengers, a couple pages, and you see what they can do with your characters, and if it works, you give them something longer.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, really,
I
you know what, they could even have a woman do, like, for a web-only comic and see, like, if they think that they're up, you know, how does it do, what do they think, and then bring her into a more mainline piece.
Yeah, you do a bunch of web comic or an infinite comic, and you see what they do, and if it is good, then you expand them to something else.
Yep.
Isn't it frustrating how we're able to solve all the publishers' problems for them?
I wish I had a publishing company. That's all I got to say. I keep on thinking that over and over and over again. The amount of people I would coach of independent creators is just ridiculously long.
Yeah. That's a real...
I'm figuring out how to do a publishing company with no money. How do you do a publishing company with no capital?
Well, there are people who you could talk to about that, I imagine. some of the other independent publishers. Speaking of which, didn't we lose Kitchen Sink Press or something? Something bad happened in the independent press world just this month, I believe.
There was...
Teacher Box?
Yeah. Tell me more.
Yeah. They, I don't know a lot of stuff. Very artsy books that don't really appeal to me. So they are closing at the end of the year, I believe, and maybe there'll be stuff down the road. But we have a new publisher called Magnetic Press that our site had the exclusive first announcement for, that was someone from Boom and someone from Archaea is forming a new publishing company that is going to seem to be very focused on graphic novels at first.
Cool. Well, how interesting. Graphic novels, like for all ages, adults, or like what's the...
Looks like a mix. So they announced a bunch of stuff. They have creators and the titles, but that's about all we know right about now. I have an interview out with them, so I'm waiting for that to come back, and we'll know more at that point. And they said they're willing to hop on the show at some point, so we have them on and ask them these questions.
Very cool, very cool. Always nice to see new things happening in the market. Yeah, I really have found this year has just been a huge increase in the number of independent publishers. Not granted, like the ones I read are primarily the larger independent publishers. You know, we had an episode a couple weeks back where I think we were like, it was all Image, and one a couple weeks before that I think it was all Dark Horse. But I know those are the big, you know, smaller publishers. But I think that like I've really found myself getting more and more drawn to these. You know.
Yeah, I mean, it's really the indie stuff is a lot of what I read. I mean, that's, you know, what we primarily get review copies of, but it's also what I find myself enjoying more.
Review copies do help, though. They definitely help you, like, decide to take a chance on something more than spending money does, for sure.
Yes.
I admit that.
Yes,
well,
absolutely.
Well, thanks, Brett. I it looks like my phone battery is about to die. Do we? Yeah, I know, right? Do we have any quick holiday wishes for what folks should be buying, us or others, before we close off the show?
I mean, a couple of suggestions. You throw some out there for folks that they're still trying to decide.
Well, as I said before, and I'll say again, clearly, the fifth Beatle is the Christmas, Hanukkah, you know, Festivus gift for music fans and for fans of beautiful art and for historical fiction fans. Actually, I'd say two would probably, I think, enjoy the book a great deal. And I know that the first book of Saga, The Trick at the Back, is available as well. And Saga is just a comic that everyone can love, like Star Wars for grown-ups with beautiful art. Those would be my two big
tips. I would throw in, I totally agree with you on the fifth Beatle. I would add in March.
Oh, yeah, March. That's the biographical comic book about...
Yeah, Congressman Lewis is... It's the first of the trilogy of Congressman Lewis's life during the Civil Rights Movement. Absolutely amazing, amazing comic, or graphic novel. I would also throw in Battling Boy, which is done by Paul Pope, which is just a fun, old-school it feels like an old-school Kirby-like series. It's a graphic novel. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
I've been wondering about that, and you just said Kirby, so now I'm interested.
Buy it. Oh, my God, buy it. We can have an entire Battling Boy episode.
I think that made on a number of other best graphic novels lists that I saw when my dad had his moment of, I want to read some manga, he said. I think that was
it is up
on
there.
The list of things he saw, yeah.
It will make a lot of best of graphic novels when, at the end of the year.
Very neat. And what else?
I would recommend Boxers and Saints, which is about the Boxer Rebellion.
Yeah, I want to read that. Someone should buy that for me.
And then the final one, it's also a lot of first second books. Another one that's also first second is called The Second Girl Network, which I thought was pretty entertaining.
Oh, you know, speaking of, it's been a while before I forgot to mention it, but yeah, I also would really recommend all of the Avatar, The Last Airbender graphic novels that just came out. I think that they're great. They're great for fans of the show, and there's a lot of fans of the show out there, and I think people who haven't read comics but have liked the show will definitely enjoy the comics, and I also think that readers who are sort of interested in Asian stuff but maybe aren't don't want a manga, it would be a good fit for them. And I think it's definitely, I wouldn't say it's all ages, it's definitely, I'd say like, I don't know, but pretty young. Not like little kids, but maybe mid-grade school would be really great, I think, for this. Like maybe third grade, fourth grade, something like that to start for those books. But they're really excellent.
Okay, fair enough. Any other recommendations or time to wrap up?
Should probably wrap up, but... Happy New Year, everybody. I know we'll probably have... Oh, we'll have another show before New Year, just not before Christmas, I guess.
Yeah, so we're going to be on here next week. But we'll be on for the 30th, so that'll be our last show of the year. So we're going to have a nice wrap-up year of show. If I could speak. So, yeah, that's another week of Graphic Policy Radio. You can follow us every day at graphicpolicy.com, or you can catch us on various social networks, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Pinterest, whatever, and all at Graphic Policy. As always, I'm Brett.
And I'm Ilana.
And have a fantastic holiday, and we'll catch you just before the end of the year. Until next time.
Till next time.